Thanks for listening to the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon on Fox Sports Radio.
Something really interesting happened last night into today, and the biggest of skeptics has to agree the Nets have moved on from Kyrie Irving, right? We told you this two nights ago on the show because, you know, we're ahead of the curve, AT.
Okay.
That's a big thing. You know, two nights ago it was, look, when the Nets came out, and even a week ago, the way they had acted towards Kyrie Irving, who did not want to get vaccinated for COVID-19, so he's not going to be able to play for the Nets until he does, you could tell they were done. And any situation that would have involved them wanting him back, they would have worked harder. And they would have wanted to get him back. They would have tried to figure out different ways. No, we need Kyrie. We need him. Instead, it was, I don't want to get vaccinated. Okay, great. Well, you can't come here until you can. We're ready to move on. And just seeing how they've acted and reacted over the course of the past few days, you had the Shams Charania report that Kyrie wasn't going to be offered a new contract from the Nets. And then today, Steve Nash said, look, I'm done talking about Kyrie. I'm talking about the team. All right, now, so much for, hey, we have Kyrie's back. He's our guy. No, I'm done talking about him. We're moving on. They have moved on from Kyrie Irving, right? They are no longer want to be in the Kyrie Irving business. And that rambling Instagram interview session that he had last night just didn't answer anything other than, yep, Kyrie's going to Kyrie. Didn't really see any incredibly in-depth answers as to why he doesn't want to get vaccinated. Just, you know, kind of just rambles for the few minutes he was on IG Live saying, oh, you think I don't want to play? Of course I want to play. I'm not anti-vax. I'm not pro-vax. Then what are you doing? All right. So still, this is Kyrie Irving. He's a wild card. He does whatever he wants to do. And it's maddening, but this is kind of who he is. But the next part of this conversation, AT, and this is the interesting part, is I'm going to hit you with something and you give me agree, disagree, and give me your reasons.
Sure.
Is that I've said from the beginning when the Nets grabbed their big three, and it was, boy, this is going to be very difficult. And certainly when these three guys are on the floor together, it's very difficult to beat them, right? You see, they win every game 140 to 110. And it's like, yeah, KD had 35, and Harden's got 28 and 10, and Kyrie's 25 and 7. And they're very difficult. But the Nets are going to be absolutely fine without Kyrie Irving. They will steamroll through the regular season. And mainly the reason I like this is because they have clarity. Clarity is very underrated in sports. When you are a team that has goals and has ambitions, you want to know who you are, what your identity is going to be. And the Nets, wondering when Kyrie's going to play, when he's going to leave the team, when he's going to come back, if he's going to be healthy, is he not going to be healthy, that can really wear on you. And it was only last season, but it can really wear on you. And you could tell that, look, KD is done. You know, KD says, well, I think he's going to play, but I don't know. James Harden says, I had talked to Kyrie since the decision came down he wasn't going to play with us. All of this stuff, they're all done. But now they have clarity. Brooklyn knows their roles. Their role players can now step up. Joe Harris is a big shooter. Patty Mills is a huge key. He's going to be able to take up all those great point guard minutes in relief off the bench, however it winds up going. As good a player as Kyrie Irving is, the Nets are talented enough to make up for that. And having that clarity going forward of this is KD and James Harden's team, and everything fills in from there. And we're not worried about where Kyrie shows up, when he's not, what he's going to do, what he's not going to do. They'll be able to figure it out. Does this mean they're a better team? They're more talented without Kyrie? No, because Kyrie is a really talented dude, one of the great finishers in the NBA. But are they really going to miss him? They're not. They're able to take up whatever he brings, his points, his assists, his floor general leadership. You're just going to give the ball to James Harden more. And I really look at the Nets going, they're going to be just as fine without him. They're going to start the regular season on a roll. They're going to beat the crap out of teams. And we're going to go, boy, I guess they really didn't need Kyrie Irving for a while. All right, so I give you that now. Sure. Agree or disagree?
I, for the most part, I agree. I mean, listen, I was on Fox Sports Radio on these airwaves with Arnie Spanier when Kevin Durant's toe was on the half-inch line of hitting a game winner. And as best I remember, Kyrie was in street clothes and James Harden was playing on one leg. And so they win that game. They go to the Eastern Conference Finals against Trae Young and the Hawks. They blow them out probably in four games. And they go to the finals where they play the Phoenix Suns. And so the fact that they were already at that point without Kyrie, yes, it makes me believe that they will be fine going forward. And I guess what I would say is I don't know, like you said, I don't know if it makes them better, but it gives them clarity. And the one thing I will say, Kyrie, out of all these guys, is just the total wild card. You use the word wild card, the wild card to end all wild cards, because I think we all think of these guys all in the same vein of load management, this, take a night off here, blah, 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 blah. No, Kyrie Irving was just taking nights off to take nights off last year, okay? He wasn't showing up. If you remember, he was on the Zoom meeting for some school board or zoning board or whatever. And, you know, do you remember that, by the way, Cynthia Nixon from Sex and the City?
He wanted to make sure he showed his support for her running for mayor of New York
there
City rather than playing a game.
That's what I mean.
I got to be on the Zoom instead of playing in a game.
Yes. And so to your point, I mean, look, there are going to be nights where KD, because he's 30 whatever years old, coming off Achilles injury last year, he's going to take a night off, but he's going to be in the arena cheering you on, ready to go in street clothes. James Harden, we can criticize him a lot, but when he's healthy enough to play, he's usually on the court. And so I bring it up because Kyrie has always been that wild card dating back pretty much forever. And so, like you said, I think the way that you put it is the best way to put it, Jason. It does give them clarity going forward. Now, I'm curious what happens if the vaccine passport rules get changed or whatever. What does it all mean? I don't know. But as you said, you got to go to war with the guys that are available. And at least now they know. At least now they don't have to worry. And in some ways, I credit the organization for saying, listen, you can't play in home games. We're not bringing you on the road to wherever. And so I'm actually with you. I don't think it's that crazy of a take in any way, shape, or form at all.
Now, let me give you this, because you bring up the next part of this. Jason Smith, Aaron Torres here on Fox Sports Radio. Let's say Kyrie doesn't play, right? He doesn't play. He's not getting the vaccine. He sits out for a month, right? Let's say he's not doing it. And the Nets start playing, and just, you know, play this out with me. They start the season. They start the season well. It really doesn't matter how they start the season. They start the season. They're playing without him. And then for December 1st or maybe January 1st, the city is doing so well with COVID, they relax the restrictions, and Kyrie no longer has to get vaccinated to play. Do they still let him back on the team? Because I don't think they do.
Well,
that's where things are going to get really interesting, because he has made his decision, I'm not going to play, right? And the entire time, all the stuff on Instagram Live, it's been me, I'm doing what's best for me. And you keep saying that, that's great, but the people, you don't need to be beholden to me. Don't be beholden to you, anybody in the media, nobody else. But your teammates here, me, and all those teammates here is, I got vaccinated because I want to win. KD's going, I want to win a bleeping championship. Another one. And James Harden's going, I want to win because, you know, my goodness, if I got one, it would be great. That night at the strip club would be legendary.
Many nights at the strip club following. But yes,
continue. he would just move in there. He would just have a strip club sure. built, and that would be his mansion. That's where he would live. That's going to be the big thing, is that do they let him back if this is something that gets relaxed? I don't know that they do. They've moved on without him, and I wouldn't be surprised if this, we're going to figure out some kind of situation where either you're traded or we're going to buy you out. It's a lot of money they own. It's a lot of money, but you're already figuring out you're not going to be with him anyway. That's going to be the thing, because I don't know that suddenly it's just, hey, great, Kyrie's back and he's going to come play. As reluctantly as I could, they would probably figure out a way if they say he comes back, it would be for a very short amount of time, and they find a way to move on, and it would be just an awkward few games while they figure out their future. But that's going to be the next big question. If things get relaxed, does he come back? I don't know if the Nets bring him back. I wouldn't be surprised if the Nets go, yeah, we're good, and we're going to figure something else out. You know, you're not paying him while he's sitting out, so we'll pay you for a little while we figure out what we want to do with you. Well, that's going to be the next big part.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd say two quick things. I know we got to get to Finley. One, the only thing that complicates this, I don't think there's a trade market for Kyrie. I mean, he said, I'm not playing for anybody else. You trade me, I'm retiring. So that would complicate it from there. But I would also say, on the flip side, maybe this is the wake-up call that Kyrie Irving needs. I mean, you know, listen, I love this sport. I love the NBA. But, you know, Kyrie, you know, has been able to get away with all of this because there is a next landing spot for him. burn bridges with the Celtics, burn bridges with LeBron, burn bridges with Brad Stevens, burn bridges with Doc. You go on and on down the list. I mean, there's not many people that are still in his corner. And so I bring it up only to say maybe this is the lesson that he needs, because there is going to be no trade market. There is going to be no soft landing spot where he actually wants to be. And so maybe this goes on for a week, 10 days, 2 weeks, and he realizes exactly what you just said, Jason. You know what? This team is doing fine without me. I got nowhere else to go. I've burned every bridge in this league. Maybe it's time for me to get my you know, get done what needs to get done and get back on the court.
See, I see it more. I can in a vacuum, I could see that with Kyrie. Maybe he has that moment of clarity. We talk about clarity, and it's, well, I really got to straighten up and fly right. My goodness. No, I see it more as if the Nets say, listen, this clearly isn't working out, all of this. Where do you want to go? We will work out whatever kind of trade you want. And the Nets say, we don't even need assets back. We'll take expiring contracts. We'll send you somewhere where someone can say, we'll take a chance on you for the next year and a half. And then maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. But you tell us where you want to go, and whoever you want to get traded to, okay, you got to think that if this is where Kyrie wants to go, he's going to give you a good effort for at least a calendar year before it's, okay, this is done, we're moving on from Kyrie Irving. So that's more how I see it. Hey, listen, it's not going to – even though it's kind of adversarial now, when it comes time to it, they know they just can't just sit him without having to cut a large check. So I think it would come, listen, let's do something here. We've decided to go forward with this. Where do you want to go? Where can we send you? And as long as they're okay with not getting a lot of assets back and getting expiring contracts or something else, yes, I could see somebody taking a big shot at it that might not be able to get a guy like Kyrie Irving ever, and maybe where he might want to go. Look, the guy's played in Cleveland, the guy's played in Boston, he's played now in Brooklyn. That's kind of where I would see the initial conversations going. And now how Kyrie reacts, I mean, who knows, because you know it's Kyrie.
I would just say I don't know where he would want to go. I mean, we just laid it out. He was on a championship team in Cleveland, wasn't good enough, wanted to be traded. With maybe the best coach in front office at the time in the NBA in Boston, wasn't happy, wanted out. Goes to Brooklyn because he wants to play with KD. As you said, KD has probably turned on him in perpetuity. And so, like where who else wants what Kyrie Irving brings? And on top of that, and I know it's a well-discussed point, I'm not breaking any news by saying this, but on top of the fact that while he's insanely talented, he's aloof, he's a wild card, as you said, and he gets hurt a lot. And so, yes, maybe there is some team that is willing to take a chance on him. My question is, what team that is willing to take a chance on him that he actually wants to go to? Because imagine being a contender, a team that is capable of making a run, and maybe he's potentially the piece that puts you over the top. But on the flip side, you get him and you never know when he's going to show up, if he's going to play, what the next thing is that is going to trigger him, that's going to make him say, you know what, I'm out for a week, 10 days, 2 weeks. I need my personal time. I need my days off. I don't see where that trade market is, at least relative to somewhere that he'd want to go and not actually retire and leave basketball.
You just made the Nets so incredibly upset. They just took a whole bunch of Pepto-Bismol going, yeah, Torres, it's not going to be easy to just – look, it's not going to be easy. I'm not saying this is going to be something where, hey, I can make a phone call at 12 o'clock and at 12:20 it's done. They're faxing the paperwork. We're all going to go to lunch. But that's kind of where it has to go. Look, Kyrie's played a bunch of places. Maybe there's someplace else. Maybe you never know who might decide, hey, we can take Kyrie's bit of wild cardness for a little while and see if it works. You know, we're only on the hook for one more, then we're out of that contract, we can do other crazy things can happen. A month in the NBA is a long time, Aaron Torres.
I will tell you, you know, I was on air again with Arnie Spanier. We started yelling and screaming about James Harden. I said, I don't think this market's that big, blah blah blah, blah. Who's actually going to take him? Not that he's not talented, but you know, whatever. Day later, he was in Brooklyn. So, you know, we always think it's a lot harder than it is. But again, I think part of the factor in this is Kyrie Irving. I don't know whether he's officially said it publicly, but it is well known that if he gets traded to a team that he does not want to get traded to, he does not plan on reporting, and he might just retire. So it's going, if they decide that this is just not working for them, they're either going to have to buy him out and pay him a lot of money, or it is going to be a process, as you just said, to find a landing spot that he's happy with and that is actually willing to take him.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
A big story out of the National Football League. And this is why I said last night and the last couple nights, AT, that, look, the NFL is never going to release these emails that everybody wants to see, part of the investigation of the Washington Football Team. Are they going to be able to get the information, the 650,000 back and forth about bad behavior from the NFL, whatever else is under wraps? Poor John Gruden. Oh boy, the guy can't be racist and misogynistic and homophobic. Oh, look, he winds up getting found out. The last couple nights I told you, look, the NFL is never going to release these emails because what is in there, I'm sure, is so incredibly damaging. And the NFL, the one thing they have done for 20 years now under Roger Goodell is they have been able to say, here's a scandal, we're throwing cold water on it when we can. And sometimes stuff gets out and we have to deal with it. But for the most part, when we can stop a scandal, we stop it. And this is why they're never going to release these emails, because this story tonight from the New York Times. Jeff Pash, you've probably heard his name. Maybe you know who he is, but if you haven't, it's okay. He is one of the top lawyers in the National Football League, right? He's been around a long time. He is their executive vice president, general counsel. So basically that means he's a big deal. Emails have been surfaced, have been put out by the New York Times about what Jeff Pash has emailed back and forth with Bruce Allen, with others, over the course of the 8-year investigation that the NFL was looking at emails to in their investigation of the Washington Football Team and their culture that they had when they had women bring charges against them for bad behavior. And what happened is Jeff Pash, now it's found out by the New York Times, that he had a cozy relationship with Bruce Allen, president of the Washington Football Team, that he and Allen helped broker penalties, discussed a cheerleading scandal, arranged perks, and had some disparaging remarks when it came to Latinos. One of the big statements out there was in regards to music or the national anthem being attracting Latino fans, and he responded in an email by telling Bruce Allen, I don't think this song or these songs you're going to put out to try to attack Latino fans, I don't think they'll be as popular after the wall gets built, referring to President Trump's wall that he wanted to build between the United States and Mexico. So this is why we're not going to get anything out, because this is how embarrassing this is going to be for the NFL. And if you think it's just like one story or two stories, it's hundreds of stories. Now if you got 650,000 emails, we wouldn't be able to keep them all straight, because there would be so many things. We'd find out all the dirty laundry of the National Football League. And I guarantee the NFL is on all kinds of damage control right now, trying to get, okay, we got to stop this. How is the New York Times getting all this? How do they have this? We got to throw this down right now. This is why the NFL is not going to release this, because this is the kind of trouble that you're going to see. And it's stuff the NFL, it's the worst things for the NFL to get to come out. Hey, that there were cozy relationships that helped broker penalties between the league and the executive. Oh, I'm not down with that. Wait, you're disparaging Latinos in an email? Ooh, I'm not down with that. We're looking at hiring practices? Ooh, I'm not down with that. This is a far cry from, hey, so-and-so is mad that they got fined $200,000 for this and we told them to, you know, beat it. These are moral values and moral situations that you're finding the NFL is going to be found corrupt in and morally bankrupt. That's why they're not going to come out with this, because something like this, even though you don't know Jeff Pash's name, it doesn't matter.
Well, it was really funny the way that you framed it about, just the tip of the iceberg. I made this analogy yesterday is going back, everybody knows I love college hoops. You know, that FBI scandal that happened 3, 4, 5 years ago, the FBI got on this podium and made this big speech about, you know, we're coming for you, we have your playbook. And it all kind of just disappeared. And, you know, the speculation is that some pretty powerful people got involved, because if the FBI really did go after everybody in college basketball basically wouldn't exist anymore if they really went after everybody. And that's kind of what I feel like with this email situation is, you talk about 650,000 emails over the course of a decade plus. There's a lot of important people that have correspondents in there that are not going to make them look good. So I'm with you. I don't think this gets released, but I've said since the day all this started back on Monday night, now, you know, I know it started Friday, but Monday night was when stuff went crazy. If you thought John Gruden was the only one talking that way, if you thought John Gruden was sending those emails out into the ether without getting responses very similar to them, and now obviously we have some pretty highly ranked officials that came out this evening. As you said, it's just the tip of the iceberg. It's only going to get crazier, and I'll be curious if we ever find out where this leak came from, and if we don't, how many more leaks there are over the course of the coming weeks.
You know, I wonder, and look, this is now, there's a lot of nervous people who are like, what did I email Bruce Allen, you know, over the course of the 7 years? Because, look, Bruce Allen is not somebody that had the greatest relationship with a lot of people. It wasn't like, oh, he was a great NFL executive and people loved him. Nah, Bruce Allen had a very polarizing reputation as a GM in the league. And how many people now are going, oh, man, now that it looks like Bruce Allen is the focus of this because it's emails to him that have done in John Gruden. It's emails to him that is going to wind up doing in Jeff Pasch because, look, he's going to wind up being fired as NFL's lead counsel. So there'll be an opening for that if you have a law degree. Send your application to the NFL. So now clearly it's becoming, okay, it's the communication that we've had with Bruce Allen. He's the guy that you got to worry about. So if you said anything bad to Bruce Allen in a 7 year period there, that's the people that really have to worry. And I guarantee you there are so many people who are worried. And now it's just a matter of, do you roll the dice and hope that this is something that doesn't get out, or do you try to get in front of it? It's really, really difficult because you have to feel that, okay, if the Bruce Allen emails are what people have, do they have mine? Do they have this? Do they feel that this was relevant enough to go forward with? That's a really big deal. And I wonder just how they're going to go forward, because once you decide to go down the road of, okay, I'm just going to hope that nothing gets out, boy, that's a long time to sit around and go and get on your email every day and go, anything happen? Anything happen? Anything happen? That's a tough way to live life, AT.
Well, I'm telling you, there's just, I can't even imagine the number of people. I mean, dozens of, like, very important people in the NFL, names we know, probably owners, probably GMs, probably coaches, maybe, who knows? 650,000 emails, the course of a decade. The number of people that are sitting around right now just thinking, man, oh man, oh man. And I would also go back and say this, I know it sounded like a great idea when the NFL said, we're going to conduct this big investigation. I understand why they did. I understand what was going on behind the scenes with the Washington football team. But, you know, you think you're not going to, you think you're going to do a thorough investigation that involves 10 years worth of scrubbing emails and looking through them email by email, and you're not going to come up with some sketchy stuff. So I'm just so fascinated where this goes, because the leaks continue to come, more names get involved. I mean, again, we've talked about it, but Gruden on Monday, Schefter yesterday, this guy today, this thing is just going to keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, until, as you said, unless the NFL plugs a leak or something. And I'm just fascinated who's going to be next.
Twitter at How About a Fresca, Aaron at Aaron_Torres, the Jason Smith Show with Aaron Torres in for Mike Harmon. Again, this is a brand new breaking story that Brian Fenley brought us about 30 minutes ago, and we'll continue to have more on this throughout the night, because now suddenly this is taking the direction of away from John Gruden. Now, okay, now we're going to go get other people, apparently, as long as you send an email to Bruce Allen. If you've not sent an email to Bruce Allen in the last 10 years, I think you're okay. AT, did you ever send an email to Bruce Allen in the last 10 years?
Well, I'll tell
years?
You, what's funny is I'm not as plugged in the NFL as I am in other circles, other sports circles. I had that thought this week of, like, do I know, is there any way an email I sent got to someone in the NFL that got to the former Redskins, now football team? To answer your question, I don't believe that I've ever emailed Bruce Allen, but if you never hear me on these airwaves again, if my mic gets cut here in the next couple hours, we'll find the answer to that. I'm just saying. I mean, I don't think so. I could say with 99% certainty, but listen, we sent a lot of emails to a lot of random people, and we work in sports, so I think I'm safe, Jason Smith, but okay. I don't really know that I am, to be honest.
Alex Teicher, are you okay? Did you send an email to Bruce Allen in the last 10 years?
I think I might have asked him if he wanted guacamole when he ordered a burrito once when I was working somewhere, but I think that's it.
Well, okay, he definitely responded inappropriate to that one. Yeah. There's no doubt about that.
My goodness. So, yeah, big deal right now in the National Football League.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
He's Mike Harmon. I'm Dan Byer. We have a brand new fantasy football podcast called I Want Your Flex. Twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday, we come up with new episodes to not only look back at what happened, what you need to do at that minute, and also look ahead of what's coming up in the fantasy football world.
That's right, Dan. Every week, we're going to scour the waiver wire to find the pickups to turbo boost your fantasy lineup, sits, starts, fantasy football players' rankings to get you ready to dominate the competition.
Listen to I Want Your Flex with Mike Harmon and me, Dan Byer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Look, Tom Brady gets a lot of attention, and we got a little bit more on him because now Brady says I could play till I'm 50 or 55. We'll get to that. But what is not being said enough about the Bucs? Look, it's hard. It's hard to talk about this person because he's not a great dude, and you know he's had trouble, and he's still in trouble. But you can't deny that maybe the most important weapon, and I know the most important weapon that Tom Brady has in the Bucs this year is Antonio Brown. Because when he started picking it up midway through last year, remember Bruce Arians said, oh, we're never going to have this guy on our team. Oh, Tom Brady wants him, so oh, Tom Brady's going to he's going to be on our team. You knew that he was Brady's preferred wide receiver. Because the guy was staying at his house and he was looking to keep him. Antonio Brown has just been that talented. And he goes through the entire offseason drama with the Raiders. He gets released. He plays one game with the Patriots. He gets released. He's got all kinds of legal trouble. And again, he's a tough guy to talk about because he's not a good guy. But his impact on the Buccaneers now has turned them into a team. And he's the reason why it is so difficult to defeat the Buccaneers, because what he's able to do now, he is almost back to being the Antonio Brown best receiver in the NFL, where he was before he wound up leaving the Steelers for the Raiders, and his then his career went haywire. I mean, tonight he was 9 for 93 in a touchdown. He had 13 targets tonight. All right, that's double the next closest player with Tampa Bay, right? And it's triple what you're getting for Godwin and Evans, who are the other two big wide receivers. As good as Chris Godwin is, as good as Mike Evans is, Antonio Brown is Brady's preferred receiver, and he's the reason why this offense goes, right? You want to compare the Bucs to the Chiefs, right? Why do the Bucs keep winning and the Chiefs have trouble? The Chiefs' weapons are weapons you can control, right? Tyreek Hill is a great player. He's one guy. Travis Kelce is a great player. He's one guy. You can figure out a safety over the top with Tyreek Hill. You can figure out help in the middle of the field. Who else is going to beat you? There's nobody else. The Chiefs, it's not like years ago where the Chiefs still have a guy like Sammy Watkins who's able to, you know, have a big game now and again that you need to be responsible for, because even though he's not the stud that he was at Clemson, he's still you know, a good enough wide receiver that he can make havoc in the middle of the field. Now the Chiefs don't have that, right? It's Hill and it's Kelce, and there's nobody else that scares you. It's why they signed Josh Gordon. We're throwing Hail Marys now to somebody else to help jumpstart this offense. Now Edwards-Helaire is out. It's going to be difficult for them running the football, and this is why the Chiefs struggle. And now when you compare that to the Buccaneers and you look at their offense, where any night they could say, well, it could be Fournette or Ronald Jones running the football for us, right? We don't need them to be great. We just need them to do their thing. And tonight, Fournette was 80 yards and 2 touchdowns. He did his thing. But the weapons they have outside, whether it's Brown and Godwin and Evans and now O.J. Howard, who had a big night tonight with 6 catches and a touchdown, even with Gronk not playing, how are you going to control these guys? You don't have enough defensive depth to be able to cover these guys. But clearly it's about Antonio Brown, because now you're talking about your third cornerback is going to be matched up against either A.B. or Godwin or Evans, whether you want to play the guy in the slot or not. And that's a big mismatch. And you're able to get down, and Brady's a good enough quarterback to find that mismatch really, really fast. The difference in this Bucs team from last year to this year, and suddenly why the offense is so good, because last year it took them a long time to get going, this is Antonio Brown being almost back to what Antonio Brown was. He's not quite there because, again, he is older. He's in, you know, now you're talking about being 33, 34 years old. But he's the big difference, and he's close to being what he was. And that makes this Buccaneers team nearly unbeatable.
you know, nearly unbeatable. I don't know. That feels like a stretch. They're certainly the toughest, I would argue, to cover in football. I'm with you in that the Chiefs, you know, and I think we might be talking about them at some point throughout the show tonight, Jason, but the Chiefs have taken a step back. They do not scare teams like they used to. You know, I do think this is probably the most explosive offense. I do think they're super dynamic. I do worry about a little bit with the defense, and I do worry to a degree with what you were talking about a minute ago of the overall health. Can all these older players stay healthy? The one thing I can't fight you on, Jason, you start to look at all those weapons and the maestro that Tom Brady is. You know, it is scary. It is scary because I don't even think they played very well tonight. And this was a team that was up 21-7 going into halftime, 28-7 going into the fourth quarter in complete control. They were able to score at will the last few weeks, last week, against the Dolphins. So I just bring it up to say, you know, scary, yes. Dynamic, yes. You know, unstoppable, I'm not sure yet. I'm not sold that they are definitively the best team in the NFC, the best team in football, whatever. But when they get it rolling, they really are scary.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Fox Sports Radio, welcome inside the final hour of the Jason Smith Show with Aaron Torres in for Mike Harmon, where Max Scherzer has his shirt off celebrating with Dodger fans after the Dodgers' 2-1 win over the Giants. You know who Max Scherzer is, AT? Okay. Max Scherzer is, to try to relate to someone you would know, you ever go to a party or, you know, when you were a kid, but it was an adult party where the kids get to go, and it's a pool party in the summer, and parents start, you know, drinking over the course of the entire day, and there's the dad with his shirt off that's yelling and screaming the whole time, and he's jumping into the water with cannonballs, and he's, you know, spraying things out. That's kind of who Max Scherzer is, except he's, you know, one of the best pitchers in baseball and a multi-millionaire.
I was going to say, he only has $500 million in the bank or whatever it is.
Yeah. But that's kind of who, when I see him doing that, I'm like, yeah, he's like the dad at the pool party that's like, oh, man, he's a cool dad, man. Look, he's out of control. Look, he's having a lot of fun running around there. That's kind of who he is. Pushing people over when they're laying on the float. They don't want to go in the water, but they'll push him in the water. That's kind of who Scherzer is.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, he's the guy that you show up at the party and you're like, oh, you know, you meet the wife at the door and you say, oh, yeah, you know, I brought this lovely cheese platter. And, oh, there's your husband in the back with his shirt off and it's 8:30 in the morning. So, yeah, he's that guy. Yeah. Like, bro, the game ended the game literally ended like 7 minutes ago. You can't be drunk. You must be the lightest lightweight that ever there was, or you're just, I don't know, but yeah.
So, Max Scherzer is one of the heroes. Certainly, home plate umpire Doug Eddings, also one of the heroes of the game tonight. First base umpire, also one of the heroes tonight, Gabe Morales, as Wilmer Flores called out on a really bad check swing. Meanwhile, the batter before Wade called out on a called strike three that's not a strike. Look, the Giants, I get how upset they are. It should not have ended this way. Those were awful. They were brutal calls. But as we've talked about it, look, the odds of the Giants winning that game are really low, right? I mean, you know, they're really low. And that's where we're at this point. It's not like the bases were loaded and it was a 3-2 count. And if that pitch is called a ball, that brings in the tying run, right? You didn't have a runner in scoring position. Scherzer was pitching really well. The inning should have been over already, except Justin Turner biffs a grounder to him that he should have made, that he makes a play on 99 times out of 100. So it's not like there was a real big chance for the Giants. When I get it, took it away from it. But more than likely, it's a 1-2 count. The outcome is Max Scherzer wins that battle against Wilmer Flores. Not just because Max Scherzer's a great pitcher and Wilmer Flores is an average player, but this is what the odds of success are in Major League Baseball. Because you fail more often than not. You know, you fail, you know, 2.5, you succeed 2.5 times out of 10. That's Wilmer Flores. So how is he going to succeed when it's a 1-2 count against Max Scherzer, one of the best pitchers in baseball? The chance they have to win that game at that point is so low. And that's what I'd say. Not that Giants fans shouldn't complain, because they should, because those are still two really bad calls, but it makes it a little bit easier to take that, boy, that that check swing by Flores, it's not like you were just one tick away, one hair away from tying that game or winning the game. You were still a long ways away from winning it.
Well, and it's really funny because, you know, I think Gabe Kapler, somewhere in between finishing off that game and walking back to the press room, I think he might have been listening to Jason Smith and Aaron Torres, because here is what he said in the post-game press conference. He said, you know, there's other people to blame. I'm trying to find the exact quote here, but essentially he said there are other reasons that we lost other than the umpire. You know, a series comes down to a lot of different things. And so the exact quotes among many were, you've got to tip your cap to the work that they did. There are other reasons we didn't win tonight's game. And those are the things that we talked about last segment, Jason, is, you know, you could criticize the refs or the umps, excuse me. You could criticize this. You could criticize that. The Giants were up 2-1 in this series. The Giants were at home in game five. And they had a million chances, and they got a great performance to start the game from Logan Webb. They had all the opportunities in the world. This series, this game did not come down to one play, did not come down to one pitch. I think Gabe Kapler accepts that. I think Giants fans on social media got to accept it as well.
Mm. Twitter at How About a Fresca, Aaron at Aaron_Torres. You want to hear just how bad that call is, though, because it was. This is the call from AM 570, Dodger flagship station here in Los Angeles. Listen to Charlie Steiner, play-by-play guy. Listen to how surprised he is that that call is strike three.
0-2, Scherzer to Flores. Just outside. He went around. Strike three, Gabe Morales, the first base umpire. The Dodgers are going to the National League Championship Series.
I mean, he went around. I mean, it's strike three. Like, Charlie's already got his next comment ready, what I'm going to say, everything. Oh, no, it's over. Strike three. It's the game's over. The game's over. The Dodgers win. That's amazing. Dodgers win. Nobody thought that he went around. Nobody did. But yet, that was the call by Gabe Morales.
By the way, I just want to say the biggest Dodgers fan in Los Angeles has just chimed in. LeBron James tweeting, moving on. Congrats, Dodgers. Keep going. So we got to L.A. about 10 minutes ago, biggest Dodgers fan going. So
oh, yeah.
Great to have the support of LeBron James behind this team. I know it's what everybody was waiting for. So thank you to LeBron for signing off, for giving his seal of approval on this.
Well, what do you expect? The Yankees are out. That's his real team. So come on.
When the Indians aren't playing. When the Cleveland team isn't playing because he's from Cleveland. I mean,
right.
I'm old enough to see. There's a lot of young people listening that probably aren't even old enough to remember. I remember when it was a controversy when he showed up to a Cleveland Indians playoff game with a Yankee. Was it with the Yankees hat? I believe it was with the Yankees hat, or he had been a Yankees fan, but he said he was rooting for Cleveland. So LeBron. I'm just teasing LeBron stands. Everybody calm down.
No, it's okay. Why? Well, you think LeBron's going to call LeVar Ball? LeVar Ball's going to come get mad at you? Is that what's going to happen?
Oh, he's not calling LeVar, but I don't think the Ball family is very fond of LeBron when LeBron got the whole team traded a year and a half ago. So it worked out well for Lonzo. He's making a lot of money in Chicago. But by the way, very random. I did get a kick out of this summer when they were trying to bust the Bulls for tampering with Lonzo, even though Russell Westbrook was talking about a meeting with Anthony Davis and LeBron James at LeBron's house in L.A. So I don't know what made me I know what made me think of it. But yes, LeBron has chimed in. LeBron has given his blessing. So now we can start the NLCS. Very exciting stuff.
Now, meanwhile, let's go back a little bit because I want to say something about a player who gives me a Derek Jeter vibe to the point where there's times I say, you know, we talk a lot about Mike Trout and different players like that, where this guy is the best player of the last 5 years, all-around player in Major League Baseball. Here's how the Dodgers got their first run. It's not the guy who hit the ball. It's the guy who scored the run.
The 2-0, line drive, left field, over the head of Longoria. In the score is Mookie Betts on the RBI single by Seager, who stretches it into a double, and the Dodgers take a 1-0 lead.
Charlie Steiner again, AM 570 with the call. Mookie Betts, 4-for-4 tonight for the Dodgers in their win over the Giants. He had 4 of the Dodgers' 8 hits. He comes around to score the first run after a single and stealing second base. All right. When I watch Derek Jeter play, and you know, when I was in my early 20s, when Jeter comes up, and so I've gotten to see his whole career from the long lens of, look, I understand what's going on. I'm not in some kind of, you know, alcohol-induced haze when I'm 20 years old going, Jeter is the best. He's fantastic. There are times when I looked at Derek Jeter and said, he's the best baseball player I've ever seen. Because of what he does in clutch moments, he always makes the right play. Right? He always made, whether it was on defense, whether it was him getting a flare for a base hit to drive in a run. Sometimes it was a home run. Sometimes it's taking an extra base on a pass ball that doesn't get far enough away from the catcher, but he still is able to do it. He always found a way to make the right play and the biggest clutch play at the right time. And certainly we have a lot of postseason of Derek Jeter to look back on and go, yeah, all these different things he's done. I get that same vibe out of Mookie Betts, is that whenever something big is happening, whether it's Red Sox, Dodgers, he's the guy that comes up with the right play. And sometimes it's a home run. Sometimes it's a great defensive play. I'm diving to prevent a double that would have brought in two runs. Sometimes it's I'm going to steal second base, and that way I come around to score on Corey Seager's hit, not get stuck at third, and have to hope for another hit. There's so many times when I see him do that and I go, man, this guy is really the best all-around player in baseball. And it's not just about his stats, because his stats are good, but they pale in comparison to other guys. Because, look, you see other guys who hit more home runs, knock in more runs. Their WAR is still pretty good. But this is a guy, Mookie Betts, his WAR is up at 6, 7, 9. And he's a 32 and 80 guy. He steals, you know, anywhere between 10 and 30 bases a year. He hits 300. He makes all the clutch plays. He is that kind of guy. He gives me that Derek Jeter vibe. And if you said back, okay, who's the best baseball player the past 5 years? I would go, man, yeah, Mike Trout is great. Mike Trout hasn't been to the postseason. And Mookie Betts has a couple of World Series, and he could be on his way to getting another one. And he's made so many big plays in all of both of those World Series that he's won. I'm sorry. There's times when I go, maybe Mookie Betts is the best player in Major League, but the best all-around player in Major League Baseball.
And I think that's part of it, right? And I understand, you know, Mike Trout, that you're limited by your teammates, and this is a team sport. It's baseball more than maybe any other. But at the same time, what you just said is right, Jason. I mean, think about it. First of all, he's with the Red Sox, franchise player, comes up with the organization, leads them to a World Series in whatever it was, 2018, 2019. Then goes to a franchise in the Dodgers. And we all, anyone who's watched baseball at all over the last decade knows, great organization. They won a million straight division titles until this year. But the point that I'm trying to get to is he gets to the Dodgers, and for years they're right on the cusp. And you know, it's so funny. You mentioned you've been in LA for about 10 years. I've been in LA for about 10 years. I got here in 2012 in that first division title, and it was playoff, playoff, playoff. Can't get over the hump. Can't get over the hump. Don't trust Kershaw. It's this. It's that. Get to the World Series. Lose to the Astros. Get to the World Series. Lose to the Red Sox. Lose to the Nationals in the first round. And we think, is this dynasty that never even got started starting to crumble? He comes in. He is the difference. He is the guy that put them over the top. I made the analogy earlier in the show that, you know, LeBron in L.A., people can argue with me, they could disagree. I know I was just teasing about LeBron a minute ago, but he is a mercenary. He came here for reasons other than wanting to be a Laker. We all know that he had interest off the court, which is his prerogative. He's absolutely allowed to. But when the Lakers won the championship last year, they weren't chanting LeBron, LeBron, LeBron in the streets. They were chanting, unfortunately, Kobe after the passing of Kobe. I only bring that up to say, when the Dodgers won the World Series, everyone rallied around Mookie Betts because he was the missing piece. He will always be that icon in Los Angeles for putting them over the top. And now the question becomes, I don't think it's going to be just one by the time Mookie Betts is done, because as you said, Jason, he is a guy that just continues to make plays, continues to put this organization on their back, and they are once again in the NLCS.
An amazing night for the Dodgers to win. And again, remember, I said Dodgers in five, and it kind of happened that way. So it really kind of made it that way. Look, Betts is a guy. Look, he only played in 120 games this year. But you look back at his body of work, and we talk about the all-around player, and that's kind of hit the wall in the last few years in baseball, just because we like the big stats. We like what Bryce Harper does and what Jose Abreu can do. But that all-around player that continue to play well in the field, because look, as I said, Jeter would make great plays in the field too. You know, it's not just the flip against the A's. It's, you know, it's other big things, going to the stands for a ball against the Red Sox in a game that wound up getting Nomar traded because of Jeter's effort in that game. There's so many things on both sides of the ball, and Mookie Betts kind of is that guy. guy. And when you get to do it on a big stage in the playoffs, yeah, I'm sorry, that matters more than being able to do it over the course of the regular season and your team doesn't get to the playoffs. It's not your fault they don't get to the playoffs, but I can't take away from Betts and say, okay, well, I got to throw it out what he can do compared to what Trout can do because Trout's not in the playoffs. No, I kind of got to give Mookie Betts credit because this is what you're paying the guy for. You're paying the guy $30 million a year for nights exactly like this, 100% exactly like this, and he comes through all the time. Yeah. I mean it. Times I think last 5 years he's the best player in baseball.
No, and I think that's totally fair. And you know, listen, the sport of baseball has become so analytically driven. I think all sports have, but baseball more than any other. Like, wins and losses still matter. And again, I get it's a team sport. I get that an individual player in baseball can't put an entire organization on his back. And if the talent isn't there around him, but winning does matter. And in winning time, he is great. And as you said, I don't think it's a coincidence that everywhere he goes, they have success. Won a World Series in Boston, comes to LA, they immediately win a World Series. Back in the NLCS, win 106 games in the regular season. I'm with you. I think he's the best player in baseball. I get the Trout stuff. I don't care about the analytics. Get to the playoffs. Do something there. Mookie Betts does it year in, year out.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.